This is an interview with Harry B. Stillings on his experience of the Navy during World War II for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by John S. Grishow at Mr. Stillings' residence on October 11, 1994 at 7 p.m. This is an interview with Urbano Garcia on his experience in the Navy during World War II for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by John S. Grishow at Mr. Garcia's residence in Youngstown, Ohio, on November 30th, 1994, at 10 o'clock a.m. Mr. Garcia, can you start by giving us a little background about your early years?
Well, I was born in Youngstown, Ohio, in 1923. I lived down on Summit Avenue, that about two blocks from downtown Youngstown. And my parents came over to this country from Spain, and my dad was a steel worker. Hmm. I spent my grade school years at Wood Street School. At the present time, the Shoal Vocational Center is on that property. And in fact, they held me back in school for 2 years for the simple reason that Spanish was the spoken language at home. And I went to Rand School in 1940, and I graduated in 1943.
That was that was one of the best schools in the city at that time, wasn't it, sir?
Yeah, that's correct. And you might want to ask me why I graduated earlier, and that was because of my Spanish. I took Spanish in high school, spent a half year, and the teacher called me in June and told me I was too far advanced for the pupils. So she gave me 6 books to read during the summer, and when she had already arranged it with the principal and give me a college entrance examination in Spanish in the fall. And when I came back, I took the test and automatically passed, and they moved me into the last half of Spanish.
Ah.
So that's how I got out a year earlier.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. It's always good to hear that you're too advanced for the rest of the class,
yeah,
isn't
it? But anyway, I graduated 43. Shortly after that, July 5th, I went into the I was drafted, and I went up to Akron with a bunch of inductees from the Youngstown area, and we were examined up there, and they asked me if I had any preference of what service to go into, and I said, I'll take the U.S. Navy.
Was that a popular choice at the time?
Well, it's hard to say, but there was a few of us that from Youngstown that took the Navy. In fact, Harry Michel went to Youngstown. You know Harry?
Oh, yes, yeah. We have a building named after him.
Yeah, okay. He was in the same group that I went up to Akron. And he chose the Seabees.
Engineers.
And when we came back, we spent a week in Youngstown, then we went back on a bus to Akron and then to Cleveland, and we separated in Cleveland. He went to the Seabees, I went to Great Lakes.
And you chose the Navy. What made the Navy appeal to you more than any other branch?
Number one, my brother was in the Navy, and I figured, hey, it'd be better traveling. I think you'd be able to see more, you know.
Yes.
But there still was the hazards and the dangerous duty, you know. But just one of the choices. In fact, I have a younger brother who went in the Navy, too, and he never went overseas.
He was stateside?
He was stationed down in Key West, Florida.
Oh, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
So, I spent my boot training in Chicago. I think it was 8 weeks. Upon completion of boot training, I came home in early part of September, and for 9 days boot leave, then back to Great Lakes. Mm-hmm.
So you had 9 days of leave after boot camp. Well, what was that like for you? You'd been drafted.
You had to, you were being forced to serve mm-hmm. in a military force, and you were here in up in Chicago, away from your family, with a bunch of fellows you didn't know in a brand new life, completely different from, mm-hmm. from how things had been. How did you react to that?
Well, it so happens that you were kept so busy. You know, you didn't have time to be thinking about back home. As long as you're occupied and you're learning something, mm-hmm. You don't begin worrying about what's happening back home.
It was probably no accident that you were kept so busy, eh?
Not only that, you know, that we were in a war, and my feelings were this: hey, we're in there to do something, get it over with, and come back. Mm-hmm. So, and there were another thing here. There's four or five fellas from Youngstown in that same group that I was in. In fact, there's one that lost his life on the USS Indianapolis. That's the ship that carried the atomic bomb to Guam. We were close. You've probably seen that movie or that on TV about the Indianapolis, where the captain was court-martialed, and they even had the captain of the Japanese submarine to testify at that hearing.
I haven't seen that.
You never saw that?
No, I should catch that.
If you want to pick up the book, it's in Indianapolis. In the Navy.
It's, the book's title is
Indianapolis? Yeah, the USS Indianapolis.
So it was back to Great Lakes.
Yeah, well, back to Great Lakes. But previous to that, before we came on boot leave, we got opportunity to go see the Great Lakes football team play Purdue.
Uh-huh.
That's when Paul Brown was the coach of the U.S. Navy team.
He was the coach of the U.S. Navy team, you said?
Mm-hmm.
That's news to me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I always remember this, that they told us our company was going to the game, and this is funny, and they had dresses optional. You could have gone in dress blues, undressed blues, or whites if you wanted to. And I chose to go in dress blues. One sailor looked at me and said, "You're going that way?" I said, "Certainly I'm going that way." He said, "Why are you going that way?" I said, "When you're going somewhere special, you always look your best." So you know what happened after the game? Everybody that went in dungarees, they kept them there to clean the stadium.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful, that's a good thing.
Did I get razzed when I got back? There was four of us. But that. And after that, while I came home on boot leave, you know, I just enjoyed coming home. Then we went back to Great Lakes. We went to the outgoing unit, which meant you were going to be transferred somewhere. And while we were in the outgoing unit there, they were producing the movie The Navy Away. Mm. And they asked for volunteers if they wanted to be in the movie. And I rejected that because I figured I know he's gone. So that was another deal where they were putting these guys to work after them. But that's neither here nor there. But, they transferred me from Great Lakes. But there was another fellow from Youngstown by the name of Alvin Goldberg. He was transferred with me at the same time. We went to the outgoing unit in Pier 92, New York. And I think I spent a week there. And it was the weirdest place. I wouldn't want to ever go back there again. The captain there, no sooner you got there, they cut your hair again. Mm-hmm. And the reason they cut your hair, they clipped you good. So that the wife of the captain of the naval station down there would know what sailors were at her under her husband's command. But I spent a week there in New York. And then I got transferred to USS Jeffers in the Navy Yard, Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Had you been trained in any sort of specialty your second go around at Great Lakes?
No, I designated going into the engineering field, engineering part of the Navy. So I automatically come out of there as a fireman, third class. And then I progressed as I went along.
I see. So it was the USS Jeffers.
Jeffers, yeah. There it is here.
J-E-F-F-E-R-S. I see the denotation DMS after that, sir. What does that mean?
That means that we were a destroyer. They were converted into destroyer minesweeper when they took the number 4 gun mine off and the torpedo tubes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were a destroyer initially during your service in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And a minesweeper during your service in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
What was your impression of the USS Jeffers? I see some photographs here, and it's a huge ship.
Well, it isn't as big as you think it is. We had a complement of maybe about 300.
300 men?
300 men. And the thing about a destroyer is you've got more freedom on a destroyer than you do on a bigger ship.
Hmm. How so?
Well, you've got more regulation. You got higher gold rate on there, which means you might have an admiral or a vice admiral or what.
So things are kept a little bit tighter.
And you gotta go according to regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's. But I enjoyed it.
And I see another denotation by the USS Jeffers is DD.
That's destroyer.
Oh, I see.
That's for the destroyer.
I see.
This destroyer minesweeper.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was the USS Jeffers for you.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first experience on board there? Where were you sent first?
Well, first thing, I stand on watch in we were in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. I was on the midnight watch down in number 1 engine room, and I got word from the quarter deck that they were going to close the hatches because they had a problem aboard ship. One of the shipmates had come back from Liberty drunk, and he was parading the deck with a submachine gun. And
I would say that was a problem.
Yeah, and he was threatening people. He ended up, he locked himself in one of the gun mounts and committed suicide. He turned the gun on him, and I'll show you later on in the that was the first experience, I said. And
must have been a horrible thing to see.
Well, I hadn't seen the guy. I didn't even know who he was. The another thing that struck me I didn't have a good feeling about that, because the following day they had transferred all his clothes and they used my sea bag to put his clothes in it.
Ah.
You know, and had my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a captain. He's a full commander, and he spoke to us on after that. He gave us a lot of liberty. But like I said, those things happened. From there, we went up to Portland, Maine, for gunnery practice, because every time you came into port, somebody would get transferred, whoever. And new personnel would come on, and it's just a training cycle.
Mm-hmm. And you had 4 5-inch guns?
Yeah.
On the Jeffers?
Mm-hmm. And we had 40 millimeter guns, 20 millimeters.
Heavily armed ship.
Oh, yeah.
So you picked up some new fellows up in Portland?
No, we'd pick them. Every time we come in port, they'd transfer some, and some would come on. Mm-hmm. Maybe some would go to school or whatever.
I see. So there was always there's
always changing. You get new personnel to train them. You know, you can't go out and you have to have everything right. A1 when you're going out.
Right. Right.
Of course, I never got seasick. There's some, because this was a rough riding ship.
Oh, yes, because it was smaller?
Yeah, and you had to be careful. You walked the decks on there out in the North Atlantic, or you had to grab the lifeline or wear your life jacket.
Pretty rough.
And we made 5 complete crossings.
Mm-hmm. 5 complete crossings of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
You were sent to the Atlantic initially for what reason?
Well, at that time they were producing a lot of destroyers,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to the areas where the ships need personnel.
Oh, I see.
And this is why.
I see.
It's because some could have gone to the West Coast or wherever. You know, our ship was built in Federal Shipyards in Kearney, New Jersey. It was commissioned in 42 and decommissioned in 1955.
Do you know how long it took to build the ship?
Really, I got the figures in there somewhere, and I can't recall. They put them together fast.
They put them together fast, yeah. Yes.
In fact, that other ship that I told you they got cut in two, they towed that back in the port and put the bow on it, put another bow on it.
They had a little bit of catching up to do after the losses of Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I say, they were, at the time I went in the Navy, they needed personnel to man the ships. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I got all my formal training aboard ship. In fact, I changed rank. Every 6 months I would pass the test, and I come out of machinist mate second class at the end of the war. I could have probably, they were talking to me in this shipping over, but I had no desire to stay in there.
About shipping over, you said?
Going into the regular Navy.
Ah, being a career man.
Maybe a career man, but
I see.
I at that time, I didn't feel like that.
You had had enough of the Navy after World War II.
Well, the part that got me is really, after we signed a peace over in Tokyo Bay, and we did some mine sweeping around Japan and everything. In the November of 45, our ship got the orders to come back to the States, because at that time they were discharging the older veterans. Mm-hmm. And naturally they had to go into our groups and put them on different ships to run them, because they were short. They needed engineers to run the ships. So they put me on another ship, the USS Endicott, DMS 35, ours was DMS 27. And I stayed aboard the Endicott from November of 45, and I helped bring the Endicott back to San Francisco, and that's where I left the Endicott in April of 46. Mm-hmm.
So you were in the Navy for quite a while after the war ended.
No, about 6 months.
I see.
Six months.
Yes.
Like I was telling the wife, you know, you see all these different movies about celebration. Well, that's where I left the ship. When we had to report back every day. Mm. I spent 7 days over there. And my brother was in a naval hospital in Oakland, and I went over to visit him several times. In fact, we got together quite a bit.
I know that on one of your crossings of the Atlantic, you ended up at the Normandy invasion.
Well, we convoyed trips from New York to Belfast, Ireland, and we met, the ship actually made five convoy trips. I made six convoy trips, and I made five of them. And the fifth one, when we went over, that was, we didn't realize what it was going to be, but it ended up being the invasion of Normandy. We ended up in Belfast, Ireland, and we got the word, our ship got the word to sail to Greenock, Scotland. It's at the Firth of the Clyde. We were assigned to go up there to pick up the details for the invasion of Normandy. Of course, we didn't know what we were going to get anyway. Everything sealed, and we came back, and they distributed them to the various ships of our squadron. And then when we sailed out of Belfast, so far out, then they start having meetings describing where we were going, what we were going to do, and what our duties were.
And what was your reaction to that? You said earlier that you felt that you had a job to do and you wanted to get on with it. Now you're very close to France, just about ready to get started on that job. Did you feel the same way?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we we proceeded, and all of a sudden we got orders to turn back 12 hours. That's they postponed the invasion for 24 hours.
Because of the weather.
Because of the weather and the water. And we did that, and we came back, and we sailed right in close to the beaches that night. Of course, we were general quarters. We were all at our battle stations. Of course, being new, I was a hoistman on number 4 gun mount. In other words, I was supplying the 5-inch shells up into the gun mount. Mm. And while we were on general quarters, they gave us, there was no cooking or anything. They gave us K rations. And that night, that's all we could hear is the bombing on the beaches, or we'd go up topside, you know, and see what was, you know, it was just massive fireworks, you know, the way they were pounding the beaches over there. And then the following morning is when our action really started. First thing we know, one of our ships got hit by a mine, and we went in to help that ship, and it got hit to a point where it couldn't fire its guns. And we did a lot of shore bombardments. We tangled with a shore battery, and we had about 4, 5, 7 casualties where some got hit with shrapnel. Mm. In fact, we had one engine room who was on the man, sailor that was on the earphones from the bridge. He got hit with a little piece of shrapnel that pierced to come right through the ship. Now, when you say it's tin can, you're talking the thickness of the steel of that ship. And he ended up getting a Purple Heart.
Ah.
So, the day we got there, we were in so close that we had already taken on the squad commander. His ship had been sunk and they had abandoned it. They had moved the flag of the squadron over to our ship. And we spent about 29 days over there in the Normandy beach. And we were operated under at Utah. That was the landing. And we made a couple trips up to Ireland to get ammunition. And of course, you know, the ship that the USS Murdoch got sunk, that got hit over there. We tried to rescue that ship. In fact, we went aboard it and we tried to take as much weight off of it as possible, like ammunition. Anything we could use, we took ammunition and so forth. And of course, they wanted to get the secret documents of the invasion off of there too. And we tried to help it out. And then finally, they tried to tow it and it split in two and it sunk. But there was a lot of carnage on that ship. You know, you had steam generators, steam turbines, and we burned oil. And a lot of times you wonder, you see the steam lines, the expansion joints given, and you often wonder. That scared me more than anything else.
So the danger of those steam engines exploding?
Oh, no, them lines, steam lines.
Of the steam lines.
You got high pressure steam.
Yes.
Our ship could go, our highest speed would be 39 knots, and that's traveling.
That sounds pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So you tangled with a shore battery?
Yeah, we tangled.
At the invasion?
Yeah, we tangled with a shore battery. We were firing shots in St. Mary's Igles. And that's probably, if you've seen the Longest Day, where you've seen the paratroopers going in there with that one parachuter got caught in the tree. And our distance was about 5 miles. But it was a rough invasion. Unfortunately, we lucked out. Finally, when we left there after about 29 days between making trips to England and Ireland to get maybe supplies or fuel or ammunition, we finally got the word that we were going to the Mediterranean. Hmm. And we spent another few months down there for the invasion of southern France. Of course, we lucked out on that. That invasion, our assignment there was same assignments as before, with the exception that we were escorting aircraft carriers. Hmm. We would sail towards France in the daylight hours, then turn around and come back the other way. And the two things that stand out in my mind were the Mediterranean. We went into the Mediterranean and we went to Oran, North Africa, mm-hmm. and we traveled between, we went in through around Italy over through the Messina Straits. I think that's the most beautiful part of the Mediterranean. Going through between the Sicily and Italy, the boot, beautiful. And we ended up into Naples. I got ashore in Naples, Italy. Of course, the Isle of Capri was not too far away. We went into I got ashore into Malta. That's British. And we operated out of JCO Corsica for the invasion of southern France. Southern France, after they completed that invasion, then we got word to come back to the States. And I remember the night before we going to the Navy Yard, we had to unload all the ammunition that we had, because we didn't know what the reason was for it. But anyway, then we got word that they were going to convert our ship into a destroyer minesweeper, mm-hmm. for the invasion of, for the push on Japan.
Right.
So we spent actually 2 months in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. We got 2 5-day leaves while we were there. We got to come home. And in the Navy Yard, they kept a skeleton crew aboard the ships, and they had us living in apartments in Brooklyn. But hardly anybody ever stayed there. They'd go there, get dressed, and go their own way.
Sure, sure. You must have appreciated those 5-day leaves.
Oh, yeah. And we left there in November. No, it was right after Christmas. We left for, this is 44. November, December 44, we left for Norfolk, Virginia. We went down to Norfolk, Virginia. We trained down there on our way with our new minesweeping equipment, getting adjusted for all that. And I think it was the 3rd of January, 45. That's when we proceeded to go down to the Panama Canal. On the way to the Panama Canal, I figured, well, we're going to Panama. I said, I'd like to go ashore there, being in the language.
Right.
And we run into a problem. Our evaporator system, we were distilling about our capacity of water. In other words, we're condensing the water. We're taking the salt out of the water.
I see.
To make it pure.
Oh.
So we could use it in our boilers, use it for drinking and so forth. We're losing water. And what a job that was trying to track that down. We spent a couple of days. Finally, we discovered where the problem was. It was in a scullery where you clean the trays and the cups for the kitchen. Well, we were going into Panama, we anchored, and they gave everybody else liberty, but the engineers, they restricted us to the ship.
So your luck runs out in Panama.
Yeah, they restricted the engineers. But anyway, and finally, after a few days, we proceeded through the locks. That's an experience.
Oh, yes.
You know how that works.
Yes. Tell about it, though, would you?
You know, you go in a lock, and they either feel it, depending on which direction you're going. They bring you up to the next level. Then you sell to the next lock. Same thing. Or vice versa, coming back, whatever.
Takes a bit of time, eh?
Oh, yeah, it takes a time. And they put us through about four ships at a time, four destroyers at a time. And, of course, you know, there's a freshwater lake in the middle. Hmm. Then when you got over to the Pacific side, we sailed up to San Diego. And we made some practice runs around there. And no matter when we were moving, we were always practicing some, whether it was gunnery practice or using our new minesweeping equipment. Because you know how paravanes work. You let them in and they come. If you run into a mine, it's on a cable. They'll just guide it into the, like you got cutters. They'll cut that cable.
Ah.
Up pops the mine.
Oh, I see.
And then we detonated by firing at it. Mm-hmm. And they got a lot of good training there. From San Diego, we sailed to Pearl Harbor. We were in Pearl Harbor. I forget how long we were there. And more training down there. So when we got out to, I think we stopped at Iniwetok, and we ended up over in Ulithi. That was the staging area for the invasion of Okinawa. And it was just ships all over. They had tankers, destroyers, destroyer minesweepers, must sweepers, aircraft carriers, you name it, it was there. You know something big was going to happen. And of course we went into, we started sweeping the mines around Okinawa there, and nothing really really happened. They'd have planes up, the Japs had planes up there, but then finally when we did make the first invasion, that's when we got into the kamikaze bit. Mm-hmm. They were throwing everything they could at us. We had a lot of shit. You can tell by this book if you look at it. It's we took a beating there.
Trouble with the kamikazes personally on your ship? What was it, the Jeffers ever struck?
Yeah, we were struck. Well, 12th of April, we were on a picket line. They had picket lines, so they had ships like ours up there. In other words, guarding where we had already invaded. And they would come in and try to hit us with their kamikaze planes.
Terrible. There's someone who is that intent on causing harm.
Well, when you look at it, they were desperate, I think.
It was a desperate time for the Japanese.
Yeah, they knew we were getting close because their navy was almost practically wiped out anyway. And the day we got hit, 12th of April, April 12th of 45, and we were on our way to help out the USS Abeley, and that's when they saw this silver streak coming out of the sky, and they didn't know what it was. Nobody had ever seen one, and here was a baka bomb with a human being on it.
A baka bomb, a Japanese bomb,
yeah,
piloted by human.
A human being, and then. Our gunners splashed it, I'd say about 100 yards away, or maybe less, and it hit into our ship's office, and then near the water line. Of course, like I say, we didn't have any casualties, but during the other attack with the 12 planes, we lost two guys overboard, overboard, but they were picked up. And we proceeded to pick up bunch of survivors. That ship was sunk. And the 65, I think 65 were wounded. And I think we had five that apparently expired or killed. We had them aboard ship. Then we proceeded, this is at night, we proceeded to Karamaretto to get rid of the survivors. And we got, I was just coming off watch. And I'm going, you know, as you open up the door to go in, the lights automatically go out. And as soon as I stepped in, I feel like I'm stepping on something. And I was stepping on a dead body. And there was one of the officers was there, and there's a few other guys there. And he says, well, we got word that we got to bury these five at sea. So they naturally, they asked for help. So I helped them. And they were given a naval burial. We put them in a mattress cover and tie a 5-inch shell to their legs. And then you drop them in. We had one of the guys' religious ceremony or something, you know. But it was brief. Mm-hmm. And we went down and got rid of them and the crew that we had aboard. And we proceeded doing a few more extra jobs, like they wanted us to sweep. Then we got word to go to Guam. That's where they patched us up. We had done a temporary patch job on our ship. And we went to Guam. We spent 2 months there between, and then finally when we left Guam to go back, we got word to go, so we were sweeping mines in the China Seas, close to Japan. And I think about that time, if I'm not mistaken, we got word that President Roosevelt had passed away. And then shortly after that, I think is when they dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And then a short time later, they dropped the second bomb. And then shortly after that, that's when the signal went up that they were, Japs were giving up. And then we went up and we were sweeping mines around the entrance to Tokyo Bay. And I remember this one day, one of the mines got stuck. They couldn't release it, you know, so they had to let it out. And no, they didn't leave it out. One of the boatswain mate in charge of the mine sweeping back there cut the cables. He got an award for it. And that's about the only danger that I saw with the mines. But they're weird looking. You see them in the water. They didn't.
I'm sure you'd be scared to come across them.
Oh, yeah, you hit one of those. And then we got word, we went into Tokyo Bay, and we were there, I forget how many days we were there. We were there, we went in on the 29th, I think the 29th of August, and this peace treaty was signed with the Japanese on the USS Missouri. And we weren't that far away from it. And then after that, you know what happened. The last part we left.
It's the end of the war. You weren't discharged until a few months after the end, and no. you ended up at Hiroshima, didn't you?
Well, no. See, our ship got orders to come back to the States with all the older Navy personnel that they were discharging. They needed personnel to run the other ships that are going to still be there. So I was transferred to another destroyer, minesweeper. And I went aboard that in November. And I brought that ship back in April of 46. And that's where I was sent to Great Lakes to be discharged. But we, that 6 months was spent minesweeping and, you know, trying to clear up the...
The minesweepers still had work to do.
Yeah, we had work to do. And I was a little disturbed that I didn't come back with my ship, but by the same token, I got to spend time in Hong Kong and Shanghai.
Ah, so you got to see a little bit of the world.
Yeah, I got time to spend time in Shanghai and Hong Kong. Not only that, I got into Sasebo, Japan, which was a port city, plus the fact that I got to go into Hiroshima. But all in all, when I got back to the States in 1946, I didn't have no band playing or anything, great me. The only thing I can remember is I got discharged in Great Lakes. I came home on the B&O Railroad, down at the old B&O station. I had my sea bag. I put the sea bag on my shoulder and walked from the B&O station up to Summit Avenue where I lived, because it wasn't that far. I opened the door and I said, Mom, I'm home.
Oh, beautiful. What a great day that must have been for you at last. Uh-huh. And what would you do after that?
Well, previously I had worked at Sheet and Tube before I went into service part-time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was working in the summertime in the open heart. And I went back and worked that summer. And I decided I was going to go to college, and I enrolled at Youngstown. And I majored in business administration with my minor was economics. Mm-hmm. And I graduated in 1950. And after I graduated, I decided, well, I'm looking around for work. And I finally ended up going back to Sheet and Tube. Hmm. Instead of going in the open heart part of it, I went into the accounting department. And being that I was working in accounting in Miller County, I decided, well, let me, beginning accounting and intermediate accounting, and I didn't have any cost accounting, and I took that. I went back, part-time, I enrolled in that, and I took a couple other courses in accounting, which were helpful. And I worked various jobs in the accounting, from timekeeping to cost, and I was a special cost clerk, and then I ended up being division head of special cost accounting. And when the Likes Corporation took us over, then they started changing things around and pushing people out the door. They put me into inventory control, and this 77th, when they closed the Camel plant, I retired.
Oh, since 1977.
Yeah, I retired, but then I was off 6 months, and I went to work for Mahoney Bank in management, and I worked with them for about 8 years, and I've been retired since 1986.
What have you been doing with your retirement then?
Well,
that's 8 years.
That's 8 years. Well, I do a lot around here. I work out in the yard. You know, as you get older, you run into different things. Like my wife's not doing too well.
When did you meet your wife?
Well, I met her in 52, and we've been married 42 years now.
What is her name?
Rosemarie.
So you've been married to her for 42 years, yeah. Boy, there's not too much of that going around anymore, is there?
And we had one child. A little boy was born in 1958. He's Down syndrome. And we only had him for 4.5 years.
Oh,
That's
he passed away of leukemia. And that's hard to take, especially for a woman, you know. And she had her, you know, she's always talking about that. Of course, I've been active with, I was active with the Mahoning County for retarded children. And I belong to the Spanish Club, that's been disbanded. I'm a member of the BFW. And
South Avenue Post?
No. We were posted out here in Cornersburg.
Ah.
And they meet once a month in, on, it's a small post. I'm a life member. And, of course, I belong to, when I was working, I was in the National Management Association, belonged to that group. Church.
Which church, sir?
Christ Church. It's Christ Presbyterian over here on Campfield Road. I was active in that church. I was a deacon and elder. And I was institutional representative of the Boy Scouts.
So you've been keeping busy.
Yeah, well, right now I'm mostly around here. I do everything here.
Very good. Can you think of anything else that you might like to mention before we conclude about your experience during the war, or your any life experience?
My life experience. I'm thinking. Oh yeah, we have reunions every year.
Oh yes. Every year for the Jeffers?
Yeah. We've had 9 so far. The first one was in the Poconos.
Well, that's not a bad place for a reunion.
Oh, it was a real deal. It was a real reunion because you got to see guys you hadn't seen in over 40 years. In fact, you know, in a way, some of the experiences you have aboard ship doesn't come, or, you know, and we got up there. You know, the first reunion, they gave me a sheet to give a little history of what you've done since you left the ship. You know, you're married, where you've done.
So you can catch up.
Where were you, where you come from, and everything like that. And that took up a good portion of time, but besides whatever they had going. But after you meet some of the guys, and this engineering officer come up to me and he says, it made me feel good in a way that he said, you know, he says, I have to commend you. He says, I left the ship after Normandy. And he says, I knew they would never get rid of you. You got your training on the Jeffers and you're going to be there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I said, hey, that's the way I was brought up. You got a job to do, you're going to do it. It's not that way anymore, though.
What do you see now?
No, you always have to, like I said, being in banking,
right.
I know what I have to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you're using plastic, you go ahead and use it and pay it off.
Oh, yes.
I mean, don't let that take you.
There's nothing like 19% interest to put
No, that's hard. Well, my dad didn't even have a high school education or anything like that, but he always said, when I first started working at Sheen Tube, he said to me, I'll talk to you in the first page, second page. He sat down and he said, well, son, what do you learn? I said, well, I said, I know one thing. I said, the day after payday, these guys are all broke.
Mm-hmm.
He says, that's what I want to hear. He said, you know what you do, don't you, son? I said, yeah, what? He says, pay yourself first, give your mother some money, then you go have a good time with the rest. So in other words, so that's good advice, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We don't do too much saving in this country,
no,
do we?
The younger people don't. I've got nephews that are making big money, and they spend pretty good.
Yes. Spend what you make, yeah.
Let's see, I got two nephews. One, right now, he's with, in the Energy Department, Washington, D.C. He works under Hazel O'Leary. He's an expert in nuclear waste. And of course, he's, his first job in government was when he was the Navy dude that Aberast. He was a senator of South Dakota. And maybe the last 8 or 9 years he's been working with that group of senators, which John Glenn heads up, on nuclear waste. And just recently, first of the year, I think he got the job with the Energy Department. And he just got back from Korea. He was over there with the government, with the inspector. Someone over there.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. I haven't talked to him since he got back, but he's written a book. He went to Youngstown. I think he spent 3 years at YSU. In fact, I think he got his degree somewhere else. And another one just retired from the CIA after 30 years. He was in the Marines.
The CIA, that's some business.
Well, like I say, I never got into the subject of...
Yes, I don't think that they're allowed to get into the subject.
The only time he ever discussed anything with me was when I was with the bank. He come in, he called me, and he says, "I'm coming in town such and such a time." And he says, "I want to take Rose, yourself, my mother, and my brother out for dinner." And he said, "When I get into town," he says, "I'll tell you what I'm doing." So we got here, and he proceeded to tell me that the head of the agency at that time was Colby, called him in. He called in another black employee, and they were assigned to go around different universities recruiting for the CIA.
Ah.
And he came into Youngstown. He went up to Youngstown College. That time up to the university.
So that's about the only thing
that
he could tell you.
The only time I knew what he was doing. And another, well, then shortly after that, he'd done all that. He got transferred out to the Austin, Texas, as the Southwest representative of the CIA. Hmm. Then he come back to the district. What I don't know, I don't have to know, really.
Right.
You know, I don't like that.
Oh, sure. Well, that endangers.
Yeah.
That endangers you, if you know anything.
He just retired, 54 years old.
Nice.
And like I said, I had the brother. The youngest brother was in the Navy down in Florida. He passed on in 55. He was 50 years old. My oldest brother, he's still here. That's the one that was had the two ships sunk on him.
Ah, right. Torpedoed twice in the Mediterranean.
No, over North Africa.
Right. Bad luck.
But like I say, I worked for the bank. I enjoyed it. Different than, you know, in the bank, and as a manager, you do all the jobs. Personnel, the whole bit, the whole loans, you know. Of course, you have your limitations on how much you can loan out or whatever.
But you called some shots, eh?
Oh, yeah. But like I say, they hired me, and I went to work as a trainee over here at the Mahoney Bank. Oh, no, they put me in a money room. I was down in the money room for 4 or 5 months. They crowned me into going into management. Yeah, kind of money.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a bad place to be. No. Or was it kind of dull after a while?
No, well, it's just like anything else.
Sure.
You do the job and forget about it.
Right.
And then they try to, when I decided to go to management, they sent me over here to the west side. I was there a couple of months. Then they assigned me down to Fifth Street in Struthers. And I worked down there. They knew. I went down there and I knew a lot of people down there. So it was a good experience.
So you you had the pleasure of serving your country during the Second World War, got a university education,
mm-hmm.
Worked a number of years at Sheet and Tube, and happily married, and had a job that you liked after your retirement from Sheet and Tube. Mm-hmm. So it's been a pretty good...
Well, outside of, running into problems with your health and so forth.
Yes.
My health's been good. But, in fact, when I told him I was retiring, I said, why don't you stay longer? And I said, no. I'd made up my mind at 62 what I want to work for.
That's right. Take some time enjoy.
Enjoy. And there's things that I want to enjoy now that I can't. I'd love to go back over. I'd like to go over to Spain. I'm the only one in the family who never gone to Spain.
Mm-hmm. Still fluent in the language?
Well, I wouldn't have any problem with it. No. Once you get into the foreign languages and you've had the background in it, you can pick it up in a hurry. You know, I don't speak Spanish to my wife. She'll understand some of it, but like I say, it's not like living in a community, you know.
Right.
Then things will start.
Yes, when you hear it around you, when you're immersed.
That's a way to learn the language.
Oh, absolutely. Agreed.
Going to mix with the people, you
yes.
pick it up just...
Sure. Very good.
But like I say, I go to all the reunions. She hasn't gone the last four or five. And I'm hoping to get her in pretty good shape. Maybe we can go down to Florida.
I hope so, sir. Mm-hmm. I hope so. Thank you very much for the interview. It's been
quite all right.
Most helpful. It's appreciated, sir.
Well, like I say, I'll help the university out any way I can. In fact, I helped raise money for that stadium when I was a Sheet and Tube. Not too happy what they built, but...
Some people aren't, but...
to me, I thought it was a monstrosity, but they... Now I think they're going to try to complete the other end of it.
I think so.
If they can...
I think so. So they can get those championship games here in Youngstown.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
Well, what do we have here? Oh, this is... So you're working on your master's, huh? You know...